you walk through the garden. Welcome to a special series of podcasts from the Center for Emerging Media. I'm Mark Steiner. On Sunday, March the 9th, HBO will air the series finale of the hit TV drama, The Wire. The show, set in Baltimore, Maryland, is an in-depth look at people who live in urban American centers. The show is focused on port workers, politicians, journalists, drug dealers, drug addicts, and more, and presented these people and their struggles in all their human complexity. The show has become known for its refusal to submit to stereotypes. Even the most murderous characters range from the horrid to the humble to the honorable, some even admirable. Today we bring you our conversation with Andre Royo, the actor who portrayed the character Bubbles. Bubbles became one of the most beloved characters on The Wire. We watched him as he struggled with his addiction, committing petty crimes and being a police informant in order to fund that addiction. We watched as he struggled with his desire to rid himself of his addiction and how the street corners of the inner city kept blocking his way. And in the final season, we watched as he began to live a sober life and his battle to find out what the purpose of his life would be beyond drugs. I spoke with Andre about the experience of portraying such an intense character for so many years, about his future plans, and his thoughts about what The Wire ultimately says to all of us. So I have to tell you, before I walked in the studio, I was I looked at your MySpace site. So before we start talking about Bubbles and The Wire, I love that that short video you have on there, the marriage counselor piece.
I'm living in L.A. now, so you know it's a lot of downtime and a lot of actors, a lot of cameramen. Everybody got something to do, and I got a bunch of guys. We started this production company called the Laugh Bureau, and we want to do, you know, just throw out a couple of skits, make fun of a couple of people, just have a good time. And they came up with that first concept, the Laugh Bureau. I mean, the first concept, Santa Malone. I never saw a Dog Whisperer, so I wasn't sure who they were talking about. and when I saw clips of him on television, I said, yeah, we gotta make fun of this dude. This dude gotta be made fun of. And we just put it together, and it was a great time. You know, when I can show Bubbles outside of the junkie role, I try to do so.
That was beautiful. It was so funny.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you very much.
I mean, it actually was. I was watching. A couple of things hit me as I was watching that video. One was, how funny it was. All three of you were just phenomenal. just really funny. And if you watch acting, or if you've been an actor or teach acting and involved in that world, and you watch other actors work, it's those little things that you do, that little business you do, the way you moved your face when she didn't like what she said, and just how you came back.
It
was really, really, really well done.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that. I mean, like I said, I have a good time in front of the camera. I have a good time with, my fellow friends and people that I hang out with. They're very creative. And, that's what keeps me going, man. You know, you just try to make sure that you have more fun in the craft than you do in the business. And, you know, the craft part of acting, the listening and the playing, I mean, that's how it all got started for me. So I like to keep that energy, within me.
So do you like comedy better than serious drama? I mean, is that?
I can't say I do now. I was always more of a fan of drama because drama, within drama, anything can be expected, and anything, if done truthfully, can be funny. You just never know how an actor is going to do something or how it's going to turn a line. And, in drama, certain things are funny. Certain things catch you, the awkward laughter. So, I was a fan of that because I felt like I kept everybody, I had the element of surprise or you not knowing, the audience not knowing what's going to happen next. But after doing The Wire for 5 years, I'm ready for a little comedy. I'm ready now to make people laugh a little bit. It's been an amazing run with The Wire, and I tell a couple of people, us actors, the first season, the first episode, when we saw the test pilot, we didn't think it was going to make it at all. Nobody wanted to quit their day job. Everybody was looking for the next check because we just thought that it was just too slow, a bunch of talking heads, and that the public, the audience wouldn't, wouldn't sit still for that long of a, you know, long-paced drama of a cop show. And, of course, 6 years later, we stand corrected, we stand honored, and we're appreciative to be a part of such a project, and we're appreciative that we can help add to the project. You know, but, you know, once it's said and done, you know, especially for my character, you know, I need a break, man. You know, see, Bubbles went through a lot. He had an incredible journey, and at the end of it all, you know, I'm hanging out with my daughter now, and I'm relaxing a little bit. And for me to step in front of the camera again, you know, on such a long, you know, for a long term like that in television, I wouldn't mind it being a little comedy and just exploring and enjoying that aspect of acting for a little while.
Because it was a very heavy character you portrayed. I mean, it was a very tough scene. You had some very emotionally tough scenes to play as Bubbles.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was strange because, I mean, not strange. I had tough scenes. I think we all, you know, all the actors on the show had, you know, we had our defining moments where you saw, you know, what the character was going through and where he was going, where he was coming from. You know, David Simon, Ed Burns, Richard Price, George Parcano, they know how to write novels, man. They're very good at character breakdown and each character having a significant arc. But just sitting in Bubbles, you know, skin from season one, from episode one, from the rehearsals and from the preparation, even preparing for Bubbles, it started way back then. You know, it's a dark character, you know, and I hung out, did a lot of research, and within that research, I hung out with a lot of cats that are still involved in the drug game, still addicted. Some people just got off the addiction, and across the board, talking to them and hanging with them and being around them and understanding, you know, the depths of somehow what brought them to that point. It's a lot to carry on, you know, and it was a lot to have in me for like 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Because no matter how you, I mean, actors, I think, can sometimes separate the actor from the character, but you've got to carry some of that with you sometimes, and it's not, especially doing the research and being around the...
I mean, some of it, you know, especially in television, you know, because you're coming back, you know, in a movie, you know, you do 2 or 3 months, and then that character's done, unless, you know, it's a box office smash, and then you got some sequels guaranteed. But, you know, in television, you have long hiatuses, you have, you know, especially HBO, you have long layovers and, you know, where you're not working, but you're thinking about the character, and it starts to come on air when you're not working, so people are talking to you and you're reminded about the character. And it's just with you for a little bit longer than when you do television. I mean, when you do movies. And for it to be my first, this is my first, you know, my first really big television break. So that added on to a lot more pressure where I stayed in the character. I remember first season, you know, I was truly on some, you know, let's get this right. Don't get fired, man. This is a big break. So I stayed in character all day on the set, you know, and it was fun. It was fun in the beginning because you're testing yourself and you're happy that all the hard work you did before this role, the classes and the you know, the trials and tribulations. You know, once you got that part, you stay focused and you're in the character, and that added on to a lot, you know, a lot more pressure for me to stay in or stay with the essence of Bubbles a lot longer than probably I needed to. And as the years progressed, you know, as the years got, you know, kept going, it was a lot easier for me to, you know, not to work so hard at maintaining what Bubbles is about, because after a while, it just becomes you. You know, you just become, you know, that world. And David Simon and them, they created the world so well, and all the other actors were so good that once, you know, it was easier for us to be off set, hang out, relax, and then when time to get on set, you know, we drop in. I mean, that's what made Baltimore such a central part of the show, because we, you know, shooting on location and shooting in the actual spots where, you know, everything went down. And then for David Simon and Ed Burns to put actual Baltimore actors, I mean, Baltimore people, you know, in smaller parts within the scene, you know, it just resonated truth, and it made it easier to stay in character.
Now, when you researched this character of Bubbles, I remember, I guess it was, I guess, 3 years ago, I suppose, when you and Bob Wisdom joined us over at Woody Curry's place at the station.
Yeah.
When you were doing research for Bubbles, talk a bit about what people like Woody Curry and others did for you as you were trying to put this character together.
Well, you know, I don't know if anybody out there knows Woody, you know, but for Bubbles and for me to really want to play this part and think about this character, I wanted to make sure that we just didn't see the one side of Bubbles where it was just the addiction. You know, I looked around and I talked to a lot of people who were still on drugs, who were off drugs, and I just remember, you know, growing up in New York and just the idea that even I had of people, you know, addicted or homeless was such a negative or dismissive type of attitude that, you know, I playing a person like that, you know, I was, you know, I guess I was compelled or forced to show the humanistic side and the humanity in there. And I do, and Bubbles does care. You know, Reginald's cousin, a.k.a. Bubbles, he does care about, you know, people. He does care about, you know, making the world a better place within his own little circumference, you know, but he has a drug problem, like anybody else who would have, you know, addicted to alcohols or addicted to cigarettes. You know, this addiction might not make everybody an evil person or criminal. It just might, you know, mess somebody up, you know, but, you know, they their personality as a, you know, can somewhat maintain or hold on to a very humanistic and caring side. And I wanted to really, we hadn't seen that much on television or in the movies, and I just wanted to make sure, you know, I stay strong on that, showing that humanistic side. So when you see somebody like Woody, who used to be addicted and now is, you know, recovering and working and giving back to the community, and a very smart man, and see him hold those meetings and breaking down the physics that he was talking about, you know, it just reminded me that these are the type of people that can better serve in maybe helping other people get off drugs or help people understand to help those who are on drugs, because they're human beings and they're, you know, they're special, man. They're talented people, and some of them are geniuses. Some of them are talented in so many different ways. But because we're such a one-dimensional type of society, once we see one thing about a person, we're so judgmental that we might dismiss them way before we should be dismissing them.
You know, I'm also curious about, I was thinking about, you were just saying about Bubbles and the people and how you prepare for the character. And we started to set off, Andre, talking about that little video you did that's on your MySpace website. And I listen to you. I'm listening to you speak now in the voice of Andre Royo. And remember how you spoke as Bubbles, and then watching this very kind of middle-class black character that you play on that little comedy sketch in your MySpace piece on the video, and the idea of the range you like to play with. I mean, as an actor, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'd like to just talk a bit about you as an actor and what you did for those. All those years before you got on The Wire, where you studied, how you prepared, what were you up to?
Well, the first thing I did, you know, I'm an only child. I was a latchkey. So, I mean, you know, mom and dad both were working, gave me the key. I came home after school, turned on television, did homework, made myself a steak and sandwich, and, you know, and just played, you know, I mean, you know, by yourself and watching TV, watching, like, I Love Lucy and The Honeymooners and Twilight Zone. And you just saw the television, this medium of, you know, especially on television, you would start seeing the same actors here and there, and they would be in different roles, and you'd be like, oh, I love that actor, before you even said you love that character, because you just remembered him in so many different things on television. And I found out that I just loved to play, you know, and I remember the first movie that I saw that really showed the power of the movie world, of just acting alone, how to change personalities, was Rocky. Was funny as it may seem, because, you know, I was younger, I was, you know, a little older. I'm in, you know, running around with my boys, and we go to this movie theater, and we see, you know, this white guy, you know, a good story, struggling to make it, you know, the middle class, the class story, and, you know, he fights Apollo Creed, And, you know, Apollo Creed was not a bad guy. He was just a, you know, outlandish, you know, outspoken boxer that we kind of grew up with Ali. Or we just grew up with people that, you know, trash talk. But at the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie, everybody was rooting for Rocky to win. And I'm looking at my boys who, you know, who for no other reason would never, never root for the white guy to win. You know, all of a sudden, we're just sitting there like, go Rocky, beat his butt, whoop his ass. And, you know, and I was sitting back like, wow, this is incredible. This is amazing, you know. And I've always had, you know, my mom and dad were very supportive, you know, and they always, you know, helped me entertain the idea that I could be an actor without, you know, discouraging, you know, that the possibilities might be very, very, you know, hard, or the percentage might, you know, be large that I wouldn't make it. They were very, you know, they were very supportive. And I got with a theater company. So I've always, you know, my energy was always surrounding me with people that were never discouraging. And my theater company, we would put on, like, you know, these sketch comedies, and we would do different sketches. And, you know, it was fun to try to jump into characters, you know, somewhat like Saturday Night Live. And you just, you know, you just got a whole bunch of characters, and there was no wrong. You know, and that's the one thing that was great about theater, was in theater, there was no wrong way to do anything. Once you was on that stage, the more you were committed to your character, the more the audience would believe you. And you kind of felt that. You felt the audience going with you or not going with you, all on the power of how committed you were to that character. And I think that's what the, you know, those were the things, those were the few key moments where I really enjoyed doing different things and going outside the box and trying different, you know, different characters. As long as I can stay committed in them and be true to the character, you know, the payoff is great. You feel other people getting it, and you feel other people's appreciation. And it's a wonderful feeling, man. There's nothing like it in the world.
It's funny, coming back to The Wire for a minute, it seems that in many ways the couple of characters in The Wire stand out for a lot of people, and I think Omar and Bubbles were two of them. There was something about...
Yeah, it was, those two, you know, that it was so strange because me and Michael K. Williams, who plays Omar, we talked about this numerous times throughout the 4 or 5 years, because it was such a similar story. We both, at the time, were living in Brooklyn. We knew of each other. You know, I knew him as an up-and-coming actor. I think I just did Shaft, so in my little neighborhood, I was the rising star to be. And I saw Michael K. Williams in this film called Mugshot, and he was phenomenal, you know. And I was like, bump into him in the streets, and I'd be like, yo, man, you was really good. I saw that movie. And then all of a sudden, cut to The Wire, you know, the first two or three episodes, and Michael came on, or his character came on, like, in the fourth episode. So I hadn't met him when we shot the pilot. He wasn't around. And then all of a sudden I saw him on set. Like, yo, man, I remember you from Brooklyn. And we would talk a little bit. And they pretty much, David Simon and Ed Burns pretty much told me and Michael the same thing. You know, it was The Wire is a cop-based drama, for lack of a better word. And David Simon was sure that the cops would remain the same, but the storylines would change every year. And so for anybody on the street side of things or political side of things, that were always subject to change. But the cops would remain the same. And especially with Bubbles being a police informant and Omar being the only, like, I guess, somewhat fictional character that David and Ed Burns created, they weren't sure whether we were going to be there for all 4 or 5 seasons. They told me and Michael, you know, 7 episodes tops, because we don't know where we're going to go. And once Bubbles, you know, started talking about, you know, rehabbing, you know, Kima Greg said a wonderful line that really kept me focused on the character was, you know, we build a relationship. Bubbles builds a relationship with Kima Greg, the female cop. And at one point he said, I'm going to try to be clean. And she goes, well, what am I going to do with a clean snitch? And it really kind of, right, you know, it really kind of put the exclamation point on, you know, we're not friends. You know, we're not like a family. We're just connected by, you know, the streets. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're my informant. And that always made me worried that, you know, if I got clean, I'd be off the show. Or if I get caught by, you know, one of the guys, I'd be killed off. So, you know, it was no guarantee. And the same with Omar, you know, this Robin Hood type of character. We don't know how long people would buy into, you know, this guy being able to whistle and walk around and just rob people, you know, and not get killed. But people just, you know, people relate it, and people, I mean, for some reason, with the acting and the writing, they just stuck out. And me and Michael really felt connected. Like, you had the cops, you had the bad guys, and then off to the corner, you had me and Michael K. Williams, who were kind of like in parallel, you know, circumstances, the moral or the heart of the show.
Right.
In both ununique ways that have never been shown on television.
I think that's true. I think that's one of the things that was powerful about The Wire, is that the question of honor and humanity crossed all those lines. It wasn't the cops who were honorable and had all the humanity. I mean, that, and some did, some didn't, but it was the character itself that portrayed it, no matter who the character was.
Yep. I mean, the one guy won during the end of this last, you know, towards the end of this last season, you know, we've been doing a lot of press because thanks to the audience and thanks to you guys and the writers, you know, after the, somewhat like in the middle of the fourth season, it just clicked. And people just got it. And, you know, everybody's been writing great things about The Wire. I've watched, you know, the audience as I walk around or I drive around. You know, I've seen the people that come up to me. There's been a big change, you know, and it's been a lot broader and as far as finding its audience. And a lot of people are really, really into the show. And I think one guy asked me, you know, at the end of the day, when it's all over, what do you think David Simon was trying to say? And, you know, I think, in my own opinion, you know, it wasn't David Simon trying to rub noses, rub people's faces or rub his nose in everybody's face about how bad it is or how ugly it is. I don't think he was trying to give a I got the answer type of attitude. I think he was just showing that, you know what, whether it be bad, whether it be good, right, wrong, I'm having a very non-judgmental ideology that people in general just want to try at the end of the day. Try to make their little world a better place. You know what I mean? Whether it be legal or illegal, the core aspect is I'm unhappy in the way it's working right now. I want to fix it. And when you turn up your TV, when The Wire is said and done, I think David would like people to go, you know what? He did it right, and when I turned up, I got off my couch, I did something. I tried to do something to, yes, make my world a better place too. To give a fuck, you know what I mean? To quote a David Simon, like, good line, to give a fuck, you know, to try. To try to do what you gotta do, what you can do, or even what you hope to do to make your world a better place.
Andre, it really is good to talk to you, man. I appreciate you getting up so early in the morning to talk to us.
Oh, it's not a problem. Like I said, my daughter's 9 years old. I'm up every day, 7 a.m., trying to make sure that she, you know, gets to school on time and has a good, you know, a good setup in how things work out here. And you know, I'm having a great time. And I want to thank Baltimore. I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody out there who really stuck with The Wire and proved to me and proved to themselves that, you know, we care about good television, you know. And it's good to have that balance of, you know, some silliness, some craziness, some off-the-wallness, and then certain things just to make you think and motivate yourself.
Man, good luck with everything that comes next, and we'll stay in touch.
All right, you got it, buddy. Take care.
You're listening to a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're assisted by engineers Devin Murphy and Andrew Epic. And thanks to Clean Cuts Music and Sound Design for studio space. You can visit us at the web at marksteinerblog.wordpress.com or just Google Mark Steiner Blog. And I'm Mark Steiner for the Center for Emerging Media.